Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you doing? How's your voice?
I am vocally crippled, but strong in will.
That's all that matters. We're both at Dragon. We are together at Dragon Con, Elena's preeminent comic book convention. Matt has lost his voice in a rather over-enthusiastic performance of an RPG we were playing. We are going to soldier on regardless for you guys, all right? I can't guarantee about the audio quality of this, but we will see. I'm going to do my best. Before we get going on this week's episode, I do want to do a little bit of housekeeping. I was on another podcast, lovely host named Matt. The podcast is called Friends with Music. So it's you can get that on iTunes, everywhere else. The website is friendswithmusicpodcast.com. It was a really lovely time. It's a music podcast, but we talk about The Simpsons. We talk a bit about music too. But it was a great time. Matt's a really fun guy. Really good interview. You guys like hearing me talk. Check it out. Just check him out. Give him some hits. He's a super nice guy. Other thing I want to touch on, I think it's an interesting bit of Simpson news, is the fact that FXX, after seeing a massive success of the marathon, because I don't know how else you could categorize it. I mean, everyone has been talking about it nonstop, it seems, online. Like, every person who's a Simpsons fan has been like, even at a panel of a comic, one of our comic creators that we both really like, he was talking about watching the marathon. FXX is moving it over to 24 hours a week of Simpsons. So, like, I think pretty much prime time every day of the week is Simpsons. Like, 6 to 10 every weekday, and then Saturday and Sunday is more like, I don't know, like 4 to 10 or something like that. They're like expanding it so that it's clearly, I think until, on a Sunday it's still 8 o'clock because they don't want to actually run it over the new episode of The Simpsons. What do you think about that? Obviously they see that it's successful. And there were, people were hypothesizing that this would be a Simpsons channel anyway.
Well, they've got a few other shows that, they run that seem to be very popular, but honestly, they saw what works, and what works is The Simpsons and a lot of it, so they can count on pretty much guaranteed ratings, so they went for it, and I can't really blame them.
No, yeah, I think even straight syndication of Simpsons is shown to be a wise decision on their part. I think it's a wise decision. I'm certainly not complaining about more access. Now, we can jump into this week's episode. It is The Crepes of Wrath. Episode 7G13, originally aired April 15th, 1990. It was written by George Meyer, Sam Simon, John Swartzwelder, and John Beatty. Directed by Wesley Archer and Milton Gray. It's a little strange having, I don't think we've seen any episodes so far with two directors. From listening to commentary on DVD, Milton Gray apparently just did a few scenes of Bart in France because they were just so swamped, I believe. I mean, Wesley Archer did direct multiple episodes of that first season. I think he was just kind of overworked and he needed help.
Yeah, it's a pretty common thing for shows to do, especially animated shows where you can kind of foist off work to somebody else.
Yeah, it's
else.
Like, I mean, they do that in films all the time. They have, you know, assistant directors who do different scenes and stuff like that where they need people to concentrate on one thing. The couch gag for this week was Homer just basically squeezed out. They've done that pretty much theme with every member of the family. This time it was Homer. Chalkboard gag is garlic gum is not funny, which I don't know. It seems kind of like that really feeds into the Bart as Dennis the Menace thing, which is
and funny. Is also not true. Garlic gum is very funny.
Yeah, that's also true. This week's episode it's based off of a French film called Man of the Spring. I have not seen that movie. So I can't really guarantee it's for its authenticity. It basically starts off with Bart, first leaving toys strewn around, leading to Homer throwing out his back after he tumbles down the stairs, which is a particularly great gag because he is stuck at the bottom of the stairs by himself with a Krusty doll that is just repeating its one line.
I love you.
Over and over and over again. Eventually the batteries are running dead, so it starts getting distorted.
Santa's Little Helper is no help at all. He just licks him and walks off.
And then by the time Marge and Lisa get home, he has amassed a collection of Santa's Little Helper, Snowball 2, and Maggie, along with a Krusty doll, and they're all kind of just sitting at the base of the stairs, and he wants Bart to Bart brought to him because he's so upset.
Bring me the boy.
Yeah, because he's been sitting there for God knows how long. Bart cleans up the room, finds a cherry bomb. This is really the impetus of this episode because he takes this cherry bomb to school and flushes it down the toilet. He's a sucker for the classics. He tells his buddies, Milhouse and Company. The exact moment he flushes it down the toilet, this is the same day that Principal Skinner's mother happens to be visiting. Agnes is the first appearance of Agnes. It's a little different from her normal, both voice and performance. Like, she's written more of just like this classic grandmother, kind of doting mother figure, but not the, like, overbearing one that we get to know later on in the series.
Plus, we learn Principal Skinner's nickname is Spanky.
Yeah, and of course the kids laugh at that. But she goes into the ladies' room. A really nice bit of animation is lifted off the seat by a huge jet of water. And this basically leads to Skinner taking Bart home and talking to Homer and Marge about quote-unquote deportation, which he really means a foreign exchange program to get Bart out of the school away from him for a few months.
Well, which, to be honest, I mean, how many of our parents have not tried to ship us overseas for at least a little while? I mean, I know my parents did pretty much every year.
That's sad, man. I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. My parents never tried to get rid of me in such an overt manner. Was not that I'm aware of.
It was all behind the scenes, don't worry.
Behind the scenes. You know, Homer's laying up on the couch with his back hurt because he can't move. He's ringing a bell, really bothering Marge.
Demanding grilled cheese sandwiches.
Yes, exactly the way he wants them. Skinner is basically, they have a very kind of a long discussion about sending Bart overseas and blah, 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 blah. They actually even make a note of this in the commentary that this scene is kind of like the most static scene you'll see ever in a Simpsons episode because they would never do that in a current or later season because it's just them sitting on a couch. Like, they really should do their best to try and make the camera angles a little bit more interesting. You know, they cut back and forth between Skinner and Homer and Marge and they try and move the camera around a lot. But it still really is just them sitting in a L-shape talking. So they point out it's not necessarily the most exciting scene. The dialogue carries it for the most part. It's not like it's boring or anything, but I think it's interesting that, yes, they would never do that. They would set it up much quicker. It's like almost an entire act just to set up the story, which they've done better on their pacing. They've realized that they need to jump into the story as quickly as they can.
That's true. It was really their attempt to add a whole lot of exposition in one scene. And nowadays, they would do that a little differently. They'd probably break it up between a couple of scenes. But it was just basically a blast of information to set up the rest of the episode. So they did what they had to do.
Yeah. But Marge talks to Bart and says, oh, yeah, would you like to travel? Blah, 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 blah. Bart obviously is very excited. I don't think he's ever gone, really. We haven't seen the family go anywhere, really. And
Besides the woods.
So I think, yeah, Bart's understandably excited. He gets to fly on an airplane and go visit another country. He's not upset about it. He's very excited to be going to France. I don't think it would really matter where it was. He'd be excited.
To get away from the family, yeah. Of course, and school.
And school. Lisa's jealous because obviously she's the one who wants to be traveling. She wants to go see the world. He is picked up by, he goes to France. He gets picked up by a strange Frenchman.
Who is very, very French. He's got the cigarette, the vest.
Yes. Everyone in France, very French. They're very French stereotypes of what, like, yeah, they look like Frenchmen. Like, you think of what a Frenchman looks like in your head, like a stereotype. That's what it is. They have a really gorgeous sequence leaving the airport. They're driving through multiple French paintings, basically, on a little motor car and sidecar. It leads to this expectation. It feeds into that what you think of France. You think of France as like this fancy, you know, highbrow place full of wine and cheese and really sophisticated, snobby guys.
And this bucolic wilderness that they're essentially going through. Because Bart thinks that he's going to go to this fantastic mansion, essentially, where they make this wonderful wine.
Yeah, and this sequence really feeds into it because you get like a Van Gogh painting. and multiple other paintings of people I don't know, and I'm not just going to read them off the wiki, but they're very beautiful. And yet, when they get to the destination, it is a dump. And Bart quickly identifies that. Basically, it's a rude awakening because he meets Caesar, and Ugolin. His nephew's name, Ugolin. They're characters in a famous French movie, which that just tells you about the level of references, even this early in The Simpsons, that my library of French films in my mind is not very wide. I mean, I know a few.
Apparently somebody in the writer's room was really big on French cinema.
They went to Harvard, I'm sure. Well, they watched lots of French films. But basically, they are rifling through his luggage as soon as he arrives. They give his hat to the donkey, Maurice, which I love Maurice the donkey. I love that he is given more preferential treatment over Bart.
Which, if it came down to a donkey or a child, I'm giving it to the donkey every time.
Yeah. And in this point in the story, we are cutting basically back and forth between Bart in France and the Simpsons, who are getting another foreign exchange student, but not from France, but from Albania, which is a very little well-known Eastern European country. I believe it used to be in the Soviet Union, and then it broke free, if not.
It was actually part of Yugoslavia at one point, and it's on the Adriatic Sea, just north of Greece.
Yes. I actually, one of my roommates in college, he's half Albanian, so. I'm familiar with that logo that is on the airplane, which you see a deal pull up in an airplane with an Albanian logo on it, which is a double-headed eagle. My old roommate had that as a tattoo. So that is completely accurate. That is actually their crest. But they are introduced to their foreign exchange student. His name is Adil, and he's a very well-mannered, well-spoken child. He immediately embraces every member of the family, kisses Homer on the cheeks, calls him Papa, and, you know, he calls it Mother. And, like, he's very polite. He's pretty much the antithesis
of Bart.
Yes. Matt can say the word better. Even with his voice, he can say it better than I can. His last name is Hoxha, I think is how you pronounce it. I'm not quite sure, but the only reason they chose that last name is because that was the last name of the president of Albania at the time. Which the writers themselves really had no, they chose Albania because they said they like it because John Belushi, the Belushi brothers are from Albania. John Belushi, rest in peace, and Jim Belushi are probably the most famous Albanians.
His last name probably should have been Belushi, but that would have been a bit on the nose.
Yeah, that would have been a little too obvious. But we are seeing a deal. He's introduced to the student body at school. He gives a little speech, which is a little suspicious. I think, you know, you get this image of him as a very well-spoken, very intelligent kid. But you start seeing little traces that maybe he's not what he seems.
He knows things he probably shouldn't know.
Yes, and like he has a little bit of shifty eye movement at points. He says he thinks like he's found everyone in America to be most trusting, which is not necessarily a good, it's not a compliment necessarily, calling someone's trusting. They get into an argument over dinner, Lisa and Adil do, about what America is. Lisa actually, it's a little surprising noting her later revelations about how she feels about the government, that she, you know, she argues for America as basically land of the free. You know, she tries to promote that kind of patriotic ideal. And Adil's basically saying, like, you know, it's the...
He's arguing the communist point.
Yeah, exactly. That, you know, the
5% of the people control 95% of the wealth.
Yeah, and Homer makes a... He tries to actually bring the argument to a close by saying, maybe Lisa has a point, maybe Adil has a point.
Well, it's funny because Homer has this moment of startling clarity, which you don't expect from Homer. He's like, well, maybe Lisa's right about America being the land of opportunity. Maybe Adil's right about capitalism being the machinery of capitalism being oiled by the body of the workers.
Yeah. And I think that is supposed to lead us into believing, like, later on they have Homer and Marge are in bed doing their little pillow talk kind of scene, which we see a lot of, and I mean, it's kind of a hallmark of the series, honestly, and it's really nice. I think we've touched on it before, but they're always really good because it's an authentic kind of moment, because lots of couples, that's where they do a lot of their, like, talking, their serious talking, and when it starts, they're winding down. they can talk about things before they go to sleep.
Especially without kids nearby.
Especially without kids. And Homer and Marge talk about how, like, Homer's very calm. He loves a deal. He likes that, like, a deal is everything Bart is not. He's polite, and he cleared the dishes, and, you know, he's friendly, and he doesn't, you know, leave stuff around so that Homer can throw his back out. And Marge is kind of right. She doesn't want to necessarily, she'll admit that the deal is a nice kid if Homer admits that he still loves Bart. And I think that that moment of Homer's kind of clarity is supposed to lean on the point that having a deal around makes him less crazy. It makes him a better person.
Well, it makes life easier on him and everyone. Because Bart, for all his, you know, features, he never really contributes to the household in the way that a deal does. No. And Homer says a little bit later that, I think we now know which cylinder wasn't firing in this household.
Yes.
Which is a terrible thing to say, but really wow. Awesome.
I know, and to be fair, Homer, and there's no disgrace, like, home, pretty much every other family member pinpoints Homer as the problem. And it's interesting that he's like, oh, as soon as Bart goes, everything's fine. Jumping back to Bart, he is working like a dog. He has obviously not changed his clothes, they're dirty. The two winemakers, they basically make him pick, like, a million grapes and stomp them while they're sleeping. He sleeps on the floor.
Because the donkey takes the straw.
Yeah, he was about to sleep on the straw on the floor, but Maurice took it from him.
To be fair, they're obviously concerned about his health because they do feed him turnips rather than sausages, so, you know.
Yeah, can I have more turnips? When you work like a man, we'll start feeding you like one. And there's a little moment where Bart is, like, reading a letter from Marge, and it's, you know, it's soft lighting, it's a small candle, and it's really beautiful, nice animation. You get a kind of the glow of the candle, there's a really emphasis on the shadows, and it's kind of offset by a similar moment back in Springfield with Homer and Deal in, like, a soft light, like a night light or bedside light in Bart's old bedroom, where is where Deal is sleeping now. And, you know, Deal is, like, it's that kind of that sweet moment between Homer and Deal. And it's offset by Bart in a similar kind of scene at nighttime going to bed, and he is, like, sleeping on the floor. He's in dirty clothes. He's hungry. And it really shows the difference between the two. I think, but in that same scene, Adil asks Homer, being at a tour of the nuclear plant.
Which is kind of a weird thing for a kid to ask.
And after Homer leaves, he does Mr. Burns. He does an excellent in the little creepy Adil voice, and that pretty much clinches the fact that Adil is not what he seems.
Well, now maybe it's just an Eastern European thing. Maybe Mr. Burns has Eastern European roots. Maybe they all do that. Mm-hmm. If we have any Eastern European listeners, you can write in and tell us.
At this point, I think it's firm that something is up with Adil. There is something going on. We don't know what it is yet. But it's clear, he wants to go to the nuclear power plant for some odd reason, and he does the excellent thing, which has already been tied to Mr. Burns and his...
Evil.
Yeah, his evil. You know, we cut back to Bart, he's still working like crazy, and Adil's in the plant taking pictures with a little, and there's, everything says top secret on it, and Adil is clearly trying to take pictures, Homer's continually jumping in front of the shot to, like, smile and get cheesy pictures, because Bart has never wanted to go to work with Homer. Homer's like, he's clearly touched by just the attention. He loves that a child is interested in what he's doing for work, even though...
And obviously, Homer is one of those guys who has to be in every picture.
Cut to Adil up in the treehouse, faxing secret documents, all these pictures, and transmitting Sparadones in Albanian. And it's clear that he is transmitting, like, government secrets, secrets of the nuclear power plant, which I don't understand how much of that would actually be secretive, because I'm fairly certain nuclear power works the same regardless of where you are. It's not like it's a military base, but.
Well, true, but I think what they were kind of getting at is that Albania is not a nuclear power, so they probably don't have the expertise, and I'm sure the plans to build a nuclear power plant on those days weren't something you could find on the internet. Since it was taped next to people's basements at that point.
That's true. Bart is back in France, and up until this point, Cesar and Ubelin have been, kind of brutes, where they've stole, the worst thing they've done so far is steal Bart's stuff from the suitcase and, you know, sell it or give it to the donkey. And that obviously is wrong, But you just think, okay, well, they're poor people, and, you know, they're not monsters. And they work Bart hard, but later on in the episode, we see that maybe that's kind of a norm in France, or obviously in many foreign countries that children work.
Anywhere that there's children working on a farm, that's pretty much what their life is like.
Yeah, exactly. They work really hard and don't get a whole much out of it. At this point, they're confirmed as bad people because they are they're tasting their wine, and it's only been in the
fermenting.
Aging for 3 days, which is not long enough. You need longer than that for wine to actually be wine. And basically, César is saying, well, let's put antifreeze in it, and it'll be fine. And the Huguenots, people will go blind. It's like, no, they'll be fine. It's just a little. And so they bring Bart in to taste it, and he does not go blind. So they think it's a success.
It's like, oh, perfect. This is just enough. Bart, go get some more.
So they send Bart off in the rain. It is pretty much his lowest moment. It is raining. He has an address on a piece of paper, which is the ink's running. He obviously does not speak French. Has no idea where this place is. He's wandering around. It's raining. It's cold. He's shivering. There's no clothes on. No shoes on. He runs into what is a French military officer, the gendarmes is what they're called, a gendarme, or I don't know how to say it.
Something like that.
Yeah.
My French pronunciation is terrible.
Excuse my lack of French pronunciation, but they're basically a military force that also serves as basically police force when they're around. They're different than the typical police force. But regardless, he sees that there's a child with no shoes on who's cold, and he tries to talk to him, but Bart doesn't. He isn't speaking French, he's speaking English. The officer does not speak English. And he gives him a piece of candy, and Bart eats it, he thanks him, but then Bart is frustrated at himself. He's trying to tell the officer about the situation. He's obviously very upset. And the officer's like, I don't know what you're saying, I'm sorry. And Bart kind of starts walking away in frustration. And is at this point, that he's yelling at himself, like, I've been here for 2 months and I can't speak French. And then suddenly he starts speaking in French. Like, his switch hits and he just speaks in fluent French. He runs back to the officer and tells him about the situation. And at this point the first things he says is, oh, they work me like a dog, and the donkey gets to sleep on the straw.
And they gave the donkey his hat?
And they gave my hat away, his lucky red cap. But the thing he ends on is, oh, and they're putting antifreeze in the wine. And the officers, that's the only thing he pretty much cares
about. He's like, oh, you work like a dog, that's fine, you're a child or whatever, but antifreeze in the wine, holy crap.
Yeah, I think that it really elucidates the point that Bart he's obviously privileged, and I think it's supposed to try and teach him that necessarily that this is what a lot of children, even in America, I mean, if you're a farm kid, you work a lot of physical labor when you're not in school and you're not getting paid for it. You're getting paid in not dying. You get a roof and food. But then we go through a little sequence where, he's celebrated as a hero and he gets a kiss from some beauty queen and, he's given gifts from authority figures and some blah, 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 blah. It's little parade sequences and stuff like that. Both César and Ulan are arrested and taken away for putting antifreeze in the wine. Apparently that's also based on a situation in the 80s where there was some corrupted wine or something like that. Not people purposely putting, I believe that was an accident, but in this situation they spun it so that these guys were purposely doing it. We cut back. We're back to Springfield. The deal has been revealed as this mastermind spy who's sending out faxes of secrets. And, Homer's surprised to hear uproar in the neighborhood. And next up, the Flanders house is being
broken into by FBI agents. Let it be said, these FBI agents only have pistols and no body armor back in the good old days.
Yeah, they're SWAT teams and a bunch of cops and, then Homer is like, oh, well, Adil would love to, I'd love to hear about this. And the guy's like, Adil, the sparrow. And then you cut over and Adil is in the treehouse, which I think is funny. They managed to make the treehouse taller than the house, the ever shifting geography of the Simpsons house and yard.
Well, maybe they're just taking chunks out of the middle of the tree, you know? Maybe the tree grows, sometimes it shrinks, it happens.
Yeah, I think Matt Groening had talked about this at one point. Like, at a certain point, he wanted the house to have a strict layout and always, but then he's like, well, what about when we need a joke and it needs a closet? Well, so they just kind of have a rough layout that they do generally stick to, but if there's a joke that needs, like, they will not sacrifice that for the joke. They will make it so that, oh, there's a closet there, or the treehouse is tall enough. But they look over, and Adil is conveniently dropping his broadcasting microphone, you know, and trying to chase after the wire, and they storm the house and arrest Adil. And, you know, we cut to Homer and Marge and saying goodbye to Adil as he's being, doing basically an exchange for an American child who's also doing the same place in Albania, which I didn't know that there was that much tension between America and Albania.
Well, to be fair, this was 1990. The commies were still around. I'm sure there was a lot of that going on, but, yeah, you know.
I'm sure our top priority at the moment was Albania.
Well, of course.
But, and then just as Adil is leaving, Bart shows up. You know, he's in good spirits because he had a great experience, and he has gifts for everyone, and I believe Lisa makes the comment, this is his first,
unselfish act.
First unselfish act. The episode closes with all them in the kitchen, kind of in, you know, celebrating the fact they're all together again, they're all enjoying their presence. Homer's lamenting the fact that someone put a cork in the wine.
How dare they?
And Bart is, he makes a comment in French about how Homer's a buffoon. And, it ends up kind of just happening. This episode it feels a little bit similar to, like, Call of the Wild and, Homer's Night Out, where it's kind of like a little bit of a tropey thing. Like, it takes a little bit of a sitcom, but I think it's executed better than those episodes. The animation is better, there's more clever visual and kind of dialogue. I think it's a lot tighter than that episode.
Yeah, the execution is quite good. And rather than just being a basic sitcom premise like Call of the Wild or Homer's Night Out, they mix in some of the things the Simpsons are really known for. Some things like the allusions to the French painters, the play that the Caesar and Ugolin are based on. It elevates it to another level that puts it well above Homer's Night Out and Call of the Wild. It's not quite where, say, Bart the General or Mona Lisa would be. It doesn't have the wonderful character development that those episodes have or the allusions. But it's close. It's kind of midway in between. It shows them trying to take their sitcom premise and work with it, but, you know, try to keep it still accessible to people who don't know the Simpsons formula quite yet.
Okay, guys, and we will rank that episode as soon as we are done with our listener question of the week. Listener question of this week was: what's your favorite Springfield store? There's been a lot of them over the years, and we got a ton of great answers. First from Twitter, we have K3K at Catherine Dirks, Stoner's Pot Palace. That's a very popular one. That was we got several, you know, Stoner's Pot Palace. That's flagrant, you know, flagrant false. The flagrant false advertising one is
Auto says.
Auto
yes.
says that. Yeah. We got from Aaron at Aaron's. I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher your name. Something like that. I apologize. Merry Widow Insurance Company, or I Can't Believe It's a Law Firm. That's very good. Roger at Roger Wong. Roger is, always answers these questions. He does a great job. From EIEI, Annoyed Grunt, Sneed, Speed, and Seed, formerly Chucks. That is a very dirty background joke. If you think, I'm not going to explain it because I try and keep this podcast PG. But this is, you think about it, it's Sneed, Speed, and Seed, formerly Chuck. See if you can intuit that out. I think Matt's a little puzzled. I'm going to explain to him after we're done recording. Christopher at GingerDome81, Android's Dungeon Workshop. And that is an oldie, but it's hard not to, you know, Android's Dungeon. It is pretty, a very iconic Springfield store. From Facebook, we have Michael is saying, In-N-Out ear piercing for two reasons. First, their slogan, if it dangles, we'll punch a hole in it. Second, in fact, they couldn't wait 4 or 5 minutes before becoming a Starbucks. He's not the only one responding to that response, but In-N-Out ear piercing, that's a very good gag that a lot of people remember. Several people mentioned Quickie Mart. We have David, gotta give it up for King Toots. I do like King Queens. It's a simple pun, but it works. Matt, yeah, if we're going with obscure places, then Bloodbath and Beyond Gun Shop. It's a classic episode. Entire scene of Home in the Shop is great. 5 days gone mad now. I'd kill you if I had my gun.
Yeah, well, you don't.
Yeah. Yeah, if we're going with a classic location, I'm going with Moe's. It's an entire scene of a great episode. For Moe's is the focus. Uncle Moe's Family Feedback. It's one of my favorite episodes. Flaming Moe's, All Prank Phone Calls, so on. The Dank Moe. The Dank. Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's a great one. Yes, and on Reddit, we have a few I really liked. Charmia is Kentucky Fried Panda. It's finger-ling-ling good. And Bad Moxie, not a store, but I always love Stern Lecture Plumbing. I can picture the logo of Stern Lecture Plumbing in my head. It's really great. And Dr. Sayus, great name. That's a great Reddit name, Dr. Sayus. The Fireworks Candy and Puppy Dog Store. Great answer. You guys, again, I can't get tired of saying that. You guys knocking it out of the park. Matt, what is your favorite starter?
Oh, there are so many. I really wanted to pick the Box Factory next door to the Puppies and Fireworks Factory, but Robbie said no because they don't actually sell anything.
You can pick the Box Factory.
No. And also, close runner up was Malaria Zone because that's where all the explorers shop, and I am nothing if not an explorer. But I'm going to have to go with the Leftorium because that is where our good friend Ned Flanders makes his living, even though it's down since Leftopolis moved back in. But hey, as long as you live a Chuck Garabedian lifestyle, you can totally make it on the Leftorium's income.
This is the first one that popped in my head, and I generally go with my gut instinct, and it is Stonehenge Pop Palace. This most Simpsonist of sight gags, sort of, like, of auto, you know, blatant false advertising. Our listener question for next week is, we had a deal this week as a house guest of The Simpsons. Who was your favorite Simpsons house guest? We had a deal. We had Roy in the Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie episode. We had Apu has stayed there. John Lovitz as the critic. Who was your favorite and why? And again, I'll be posting on our social media. You can find us on Twitter, at Simpsons Show Pod. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod. You can email us at TheSimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. We're going to end this episode the way we end every episode, and that was the segment we call Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Where we rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically. Now, Matt, where is this one end up for you? It mentioned earlier that it's better than the ones that were kind of similar to it, like Homer's Night Out and Call of the Simpsons.
Well, honestly, it's definitely better than Call of the Simpsons or Homer's Night Out. It's definitely not as good as Bart the General and Morning Lisa. So I would have to say its main competition has to be Life on the Fast Lane so far. Going between the two, I really think that I like Life on the Fast Lane. But to be fair, the jokes just don't come as well in that episode because it's a very serious subject matter. So me being the comedy person that I am, I'm going to have to put it higher than Life on the Fast Lane.
Higher than Life on the Fast Lane. This obviously is subjective, but I think we should try to be objective. I aim to be as objective as possible. And I think that why I would put Life on the Fast Lane slightly above it is because everything in that episode is kind of all going towards the end goal of that. While this episode, the first act really meanders a lot, you know, you get a lot of exposition dump, and I don't think it's neat and tight. And I agree that it has more kind of jokes and it's certainly a funnier episode, but I think that the tightness of Life on the Fast Lane puts it above.
Well, if we're going to do this objectively, then yeah, obviously this is, this is not as good as Life on the Fast Lane, but if you want to live your life objectively, Robbie.
Okay. Are you on board?
All right, fine. We're going to put this one below Life on the Fast Lane, just barely. Just barely. Four.
This will be
below
the new number four, above Telltale Head, which I think that's a good spot for it. I think Telltale Head is a good episode, and I think this is right at that level. And with that, I think we'll bring this episode to a close before we go. If you like the show, please give us good reviews on iTunes, rate us, subscribe, Stitcher as well, Stitcher Radio. though they really help us out. They really get us better placement. I don't understand how all that works. iTunes is a mysterious thing, but I know it does work. If you get more reviews, you get more 5 stars and more subscriptions, you do better. We rely on you guys. Spread the word. Really appreciate it. On Twitter, I am at Mixmaster Serial. MIXMASTERCREAL. Matt does not participate in social media. He thinks it's devil's work, and he thinks you're all going to hell.
That's absolutely true. Don't be tweeting at me or anything like that. I will be in my deathbed at the hospital until next week.
And with that, I am Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
Keep watching The Simpsons.